Today's show is sponsored by a new podcast called Somebody Somewhere.
Somebody went into Tom Wales' backyard to kill Tom Wales, and that's what they did.
Definitely pop, 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 like in succession.
One of the most notorious unsolved murders in Seattle history.
Is anyone there?
I think we should get out of here before the police come.
Well, I didn't like the fact that he was the last person to see the victim alive.
This is a well-planned assassination.
He'll kill anybody for whatever reason that it suits him at the moment.
And is it okay if I mention names?
Absolutely.
The Justice Department still has a reward for up to $1 million.
I hope somebody walks up to you with their AR-15 and sprays your brain, blood, and guts all over the pavement.
Don't get me T-boned.
Stop!
Coming in January 2018, Somebody Somewhere, an investigation into the assassination of Assistant United States Attorney Tom Wales.
Have a nice day, fucker.
God, that sounds like him.
Wow. And did he confess?
No.
Maybe because he didn't do it.
Be sure to subscribe. Hey guys, it's Vanessa with The Cleaning of John Doe. We've got a special episode for you today, and I'm here with Ethan.
Hello, everybody.
So we're taking up a bunch of questions. We had a whole bunch of different podcast hosts ask questions on your behalf. So this should be fun. Introduce you guys to some new shows, and yeah, let's get started.
Hey, it's Jamie from the Murderish podcast. Karen Silverstein Rodriguez wants to ask, do you think you'll get to a point where you'll franchise the business?
Jamie lives just a little south of us, which I thought was really cool when I heard it in her podcast. So I got kind of excited. Okay, sorry. Good question, though. Okay, so this is something Ethan and I have struggled with. We'd love to do it, but I don't think we will do it. And mainly because we're not a humongous corporation that has billions of dollars to just invest. If this company is a flop, then we just do it again. So our name is on it. Our name is attached to it. And it's one of those things. It's your baby. You built it and you grew it. And, you know, we can only be as personal as I don't even know.
Yeah, it's really, in that regard, we're our own worst enemy in terms of franchising.
We've been approached.
We're a little selfish about it.
We've been approached so many times asking if, you know, somebody can buy a franchise, and it's like, nope, we're not doing that right now. We might branch out at some point, but for now, it's a little terrifying. And it's not, for me personally, it's not so much the legal mumbo jumbo of it. It's somebody has the potential to take our business name and destroy it just in the blink of an eye.
Right. We the one thing that sets us apart from everybody else, I mean, honestly, anybody who cleans up crime scenes can clean up a crime scene.
It's right.
The procedure is the same. The main difference with us is customer service. We literally treat every one of our clients like they're our own family. You know, we're very compassionate, we're very caring.
We send out annual Christmas, handwritten Christmas cards to our clients.
Yeah, there's a huge personal touch in terms of our delivery of our service. And, you know, it's worked for us and it's gone a long way. And that's, you know, it's scary turning that over to trusting somebody else to deliver that same level of service.
It's terrifying.
Without us having our own hand in the pot.
Yeah. Plus, I'm a control freak. So if I'm out of control, it's just awful. Yeah, so that's, I think.
Maybe someday, but not right now.
Yeah, maybe someday. I don't know. Yeah, it's one of those things. I would rather build up a totally different crime scene cleaning company and franchise that one than the one that, you know, we initially started, if that makes any sense at all whatsoever.
Hi, this is Adam from the Secret History of Hollywood podcast. And Kathy Franco was wondering, have you ever cleaned a house more than once? Two different deaths. Well?
We've never done the same house.
For a
death.
We have for hoarding.
Yeah, we've had a few repeat customers on hoarding. But yeah, as far as a death scene go, we've never been to the same house. We have been to the same apartment building, different units. And then also we've worked with like real estate agents who own multiple properties. We've worked for them, you know, more than once, but at different properties. So no, not the same house.
Right. But we've also done them on the same street and even in the same neighborhood. We were actually just out last couple nights ago and we were pointing out, oh, we were there. Oh, we were there. Oh, we were
there.
We
did a suicide there. Yeah. We did a suicide there.
I mean, it's not funny at all, but in that situation, it's so rare that it's just strange when you're pointing out three or four different places you've been at all within a block of each other.
Hey, Vanessa, this is Jeremy from the podcast We Listen To podcast. Your listener, Kathy Franco, asks, who pays for your services? Does payment mostly come from the owner of the house, or is this something home or life insurance can cover? Thanks.
So this is the thing. This is why homeowners insurance covers it, because when you have a homeowners insurance policy, what you are doing is you're insuring the property.
The structure.
Right, the structure. So in the case of a water loss, if your water heater busts open and spills water all over the house, the structure itself is affected by the water. So you need a restoration company to come in and dry the structure out.
However, real quick, I know he's not going all the way there with this, but most insurance companies have stipulations on water and mold. So he's just using the structure aspect of it as an example.
So in the case of a suicide or a decomposition, it is something that affects the property. It makes that property unsafe or uninhabitable. So the insurance company is going to take care of it. Now, there is a caveat on that, is that, and I have only seen it one or two times, but there are some policies that have a specific clause saying that they will not cover biohazard situations. It's very, very rare, but you may want to make sure that your policy does have that when you are insuring your home.
Right. And then hoarding is usually covered by the homeowner or the family or whoever hires us. But basically, if there's no insurance on the property, then it is covered by the owner of the property.
For a death scene, right. Hoarding, insurance companies don't cover that because that is considered neglect by the homeowner, which is true. So it's not something they cover.
Right.
Hello, Vanessa.
And hello, all listeners to the Cleaning of John Doe podcast.
My name is Jim.
And my name is Kit Karen.
We host the Forgotten News podcast.
And we have a question that we will be asking Vanessa on behalf of one of her listeners, Ariel Shapiro.
Ariel wants to know, how did your close friends and family react to your choice in going into this business?
She also asks, do you ever get flack from them from time to time? Or since you've been at it for a while, has everyone made their peace with the weirdness? Hey, Vanessa, I'd like to know that myself.
I don't know if anybody really took us seriously. They may have thought it was a joke. I remember my dad being like, whoa, I think that's pretty cool. I think you should go for it. But the truth is I think he would have told me that regardless. Just, you know, it's a supportive, you can do whatever you want type of a response from a parent. But I think now at this point, now that we're in it and we've been successful with it, I don't know, they kind of realize that we're providing a valuable service. They're, yeah, everybody's more or less fascinated with it. But I remember the first decomp Ethan and I did, and I had to drop my kids off at my dad's house with my stepmom. And when we came to pick them up, we smelled so bad, she would not let us in the house to get our kids. Like, she sent the kids out. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
So yeah, so there's that aspect of it. It's, you know, don't go have Thanksgiving dinner after going to a decomp, but at the same time, they recognize that, you know, we have a job, we're doing it well, we're providing a service, and so I think the weirdness is kind of faded.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember this, but in the beginning, pretty much everybody was, they were kind of patronizing. Like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. Like, you know, that's dumb, it's not going to go anywhere. You know, they're not going to last in that. We had, I had quite a few people basically try to talk me out of it. Like, do you really want to go work for yourself? You have all this stuff to worry about as a business owner. And, you know, like, yes, of course I do. Yeah. You know, I don't think it took that long, but once we got really, really busy and we were both doing it full time, I think people accepted it and realized it, wasn't such a bad idea.
Yeah. Hey, Vanessa, it's Lee, co-host of the Missing Minority Project podcast. Kathy Franco asked, do you regularly get tested for certain diseases or illnesses?
Inadvertently, yes, because I've been pregnant a million times. So yeah, I kind of get tested. I've been tested quite a bit for diseases and illnesses. But for me personally, I'm just going to speak for myself, and I don't recommend this with our guys. And, you know, if Ethan felt differently, he's more than happy to go get tested and whatnot. But we're so cautious, and we've never had any near scares or pricks or anything like that that would then set my guard to make me want to go get tested. Like, we've had no accidents at all. So
knock on wood.
Yeah, knock wood. The truth is I've not been tested specifically because of my line of work. However, I've been tested, just pregnancy tests that check for, you know, hepatitis and HIV and stuff like that. So just kind of the standard battery of tests for pregnancy. So far, I'm clean.
Yeah, I mean, none of our guys or us have ever been real, you know, hypochondriac. It's really not something we're concerned with because, like Vanessa said, we haven't had any real accidents. We've had a couple guys, you know, that have, like, stepped on a nail or something like that, but they've already had their tetanus shots, so they're in good shape.
But they weren't bloody nails.
Yeah, you know? No, it's on, like on a hoarding job.
Right. So, yeah.
This is Randy Andrews from Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. Laura Cole was wondering, have you ever had to go to court as a result of your job, and was there anything you weren't able to clean? Thank you.
We had one client who received the check from the insurance company and didn't pay us. And so we were chasing her. She wasn't answering any of our calls or anything.
Not calls, texts, emails, and we were very nice. We weren't even... You know, we realized that somebody had just passed away, and we try to give the family a lot of time to deal with everything that they have to deal with before we start chasing them. But I think it had been like 5 or 6 months.
At least, yeah. And then so we filed the small claims, and literally the day before we were going to go to court, she called and paid.
Yeah.
So it worked out, but yeah, and in terms of actually going to court, no. You know, I know that there are a couple companies out there that are very involved in the court system because of the way they do their business. But for us, that's never been an issue.
Yeah. And, you know, we're not one to quickly go file paperwork. We give the client plenty of time and let them know, like, hey, just let us know what's happening. Unlike any other company in our industry that we know of in California, we do payment arrangements with our clients if they need it. So, you know, if they're on a payment arrangement, that's just a handshake between us. We don't get third parties involved. There's no interest. We take their word that they're going to pay us. And, you know, we just, if we don't get a check when we're supposed to, we reach out. If they're going through hard times, you know, we work with them. So we're not sue happy.
Yeah, I think in our entire history, there's only been
twice.
Two clients that have given us grief about paying us. And, you know, we've been able to resolve it before it actually went to court. But yeah, usually it's not an issue. And then as far as there being anything that we weren't able to clean, no. If it can be cleaned, we clean it. If it can't, we dispose of it. Usually when there's something we can't clean, it's because it's fabric. And on this, we can get the surface stain out, but we can't make any guarantees on anything beneath the surface. Just as an example, we had a tear gas job we did. They had another company come in to do, I guess, the the perpetrator got shot in the house or something, but there had been blood. And they had another company come in and do that part of it, and then they called us in to do the tear gas. Don't ask me why it worked out that way. That's just the way it did. But when we were in there and we were removing the carpet, when you looked at it, there was no stain or anything. It looked great. Then when we peeled the carpet back up, a huge blood stain on the bottom of the carpet. And that's something that we would never do. So if we can't fully clean it and remove every spot of blood from it, we cut it out and dispose of it.
If you're enjoying today's episode, check out Resonate Recordings. They mix, mastered, and produced all of my episodes, and they're an awesome group. Resonate Recordings took all the worry and stress out of podcasting and made it such a unique and fun experience for me. Resonate Recordings is more than just a professional podcast editing and production service. They're like an invested business partner. Everything from hosting setup, RSS feed configuration, even to helping me find sponsors. I honestly can't say enough great things about them. I hired Resonate Recordings when I realized that I could either spend time or money. And since I can always make more money, it was an easy decision. Chances are, with a professionally produced podcast, making money off it might be easier than you think. Visit ResonateRecordings.com and they'll do your first episode for free with no strings attached. But don't forget to tell them Vanessa sent you. Now back to the show.
This is Issa from the Young, Free and Coupled podcast. Mike Clark would like to know, do you ever participate in the restoration of a scene after it's been cleaned?
So I'll take this. We usually don't, especially on the restoration side of it. We usually don't. However, I did a cleanup in the early days. Ethan had a full-time job at the time, and he helped me with the biohazard side of it. And then after that, it was kind of trashing out the place, and I got somebody else to help me with that part of it. And we repainted the room because the family was so completely tore up over it that we wanted to change the full appearance of it. And also because there were stains and whatnot on the walls. Usually we could primer it, but it just went, for some reason, I connected a lot with that family, and we just went the extra mile and repainted it for them a different color and tried to make, you know, the room look different altogether so it wasn't a painful reminder for them. So I think for me, that's as close as I've gotten to the restoration side of it.
Yeah, and I think I've had maybe one or two clients that have asked for referrals on, you know, putting carpet in or placing walls. But, you know, typically homeowners have their own contractors or handymen they like to go with, and that's fine.
Yeah. We actually did do carpet install at one job we did. It was an apartment, and the maintenance guy found the deceased, and he refused to go in there under any circumstances. And so the property owner asked me if we would just do the carpet for her, which we did. So yeah, that's, again, as close as we've gotten. It's not typically something we do.
This is Zachary James Steele.
And Christian Flack.
For the Comedy Bull Podcast.
Kathy Franco asks, where and how do you dispose of biohazard contents?
And do you have to record or log what you dispose? Great question, Kathy. Let's find out.
No, we don't. There are certain cases that we do where most people don't have contents coverage on their homeowner's policy, which means that if the couch was contaminated and we have to cut it out and remove it, the insurance company is not going to cover the cost of replacing that couch. You know, structurally, they do. They'll cover it. So if we have to cut out section of wall or flooring or carpet or whatever, they'll replace that. But unless you specifically have a contents coverage in your policy, they will not cover your contents. So when they don't have contents, we don't log it. We do take note of it, and we let the homeowners know what we had to dispose of and why. But that's just out of courtesy. It's not required of us. In the case where they do have contents coverage, then yes, we record everything that we throw away. So we do a full inventory, photo documentation, everything. That way the insurance company can accurately replace what was disposed of.
Right. And then in terms of the medical waste side of it, or the biohazard waste side of it, we have a manifest or a tracking document that we do fill out for what property we cleaned up with the address, and then, you know, what type of stuff was disposed of. It's not any sort of itemized. It's just clumped in, like, we have sharps or needles in this batch. And so basically it's kind of check off what the the facility can expect in that particular load of biohazard waste.
Right. Specific waste is treated. I know this is getting a little off topic, but specific waste is treated in different ways. So when I was talking about where we dispose of it, I mentioned autoclave and then incineration. Pathological waste, which is any bodily material, so, you know, chunks of brain or skull or body parts, anything like that, that we do find, that is considered pathological waste, and it's bagged up separately as opposed to everything else, which is just biohazard.
Right. So
the pathological waste gets incinerated and all the other stuff gets autoclaved.
Right.
Hi, Vanessa and Ethan. This is Megan. I am one half of Can We Cult. We are huge fans of your show and have talked about you a bunch. And the question that my co-host Allie and I have and that we keep coming back to is, have you ever stayed in contact with a client or worked with a client more than once? Really would love to hear the answer to that. And again, thank you for your show. You guys are awesome. And we look forward to every episode.
The answer to that is yes. And honestly, I would keep in touch with every single client if I wasn't a painful reminder. There have been a few clients that I've had a connection with that I keep in touch with them, even though we cleaned up a death for them. You know, it's emails or phone calls or Christmas cards, or I knew there was a connection with those particular clients, so I've stayed in touch with them. I know Ethan has formed friendships with, you know, some of the men that he's worked with. We've worked with clients more than once. Usually it's not a death. It would be for a hoarding job.
Yeah, we've had a few clients that we worked for multiple times on hoarding jobs. I think Vanessa went over that in a different question, but we have another client that we're really good friends with that we've done, I think, like 11 different jobs for, you know, in varying sizes. But, you know, I'm not trying to brag or anything, but I think we're likable people, and, you know, we're just people like the honesty, and provided it's not a death situation where we are a painful reminder, people just like us.
I'm Dan from the Based on a True Story podcast, and I've got a question here from Anthony Ward on CastBox FM. Anthony asks, do you use UV light like in TV shows to find blood?
We have a variety of tools that we use, and we do have UV light. We don't use it often, but in situations where it's needed, we will use UV light.
Yeah, it's not common. It's usually not hard to find it in our job.
Right.
This is Natalie from the Feminist Furies podcast. Graham Quick asked, are you still in the business, or is the podcast reflecting on your time when you were?
So I'll answer that. It's a little bit of both. The business still exists 100%, and I still do cleanups. It's not as frequent as, you know, before I had a million children, but plus we have a really good crew, and he's got it dialed in at this point. But I will go to jobs if a client has a particular attachment to me, or a lot of times it's on hoarding jobs and it's a woman and she wants a female there. So I'll go in those scenarios. Or if Ethan needs extra hands, or if we give the guys off, or there's emergency. So it's a little bit of both. It's in the earlier days, I was in this 24/7, and, you know, it was Ethan and I responding to every single call. And as our business has grown and our family has grown, I kind of try to run more of the office stuff, and Ethan is more in the field, at least until the kids get a little bit older. And our two youngest are 3 and 1. So they're still preschool aged. And I mean, we do have sitters still on call that we can call if he needs me. But right now at this particular point in time, he's pretty much got it dialed in. Yeah, so that's that.
This is Eric R. Hill with Stories Telling Stories, and Chris Fast is wondering, where does the stuff go that you clean up? Landfill? Medical waste? Hazardous waste? Etc.
All right, well, I think we answered this question already, but I'll cover it again. Any pathological waste, such as body parts, skull fragments, pieces of brain, whatever, that gets incinerated out of state. For us, because California has regulations on, they don't allow incinerations anymore. So that stuff gets transported out of state. Other contaminated materials, they go through a process called autoclave, where they get treated they get treated by really hot steam. And it, you know, obviously is going to kill any pathogen that may be contained therein. But yeah, other than that, if for example, like we also covered the mattress, if it's got blood on it, we're going to cut out the bloody part of the mattress. So we're going to dispose of that with biohazard waste. The mattress itself, what's left of it, can just go in the landfill. So I hope that answers your question.
Hey, this is Christopher DeVos from Podcast 42, and Holly Marie Dunning is wondering, have you ever been sick at a job from what you see / smell?
There have been quite a few situations where the substance that we're smelling is overpowering.
It's usually not a death, though.
A couple times it has been. There's a few, and I'll be frank here. It's, you know, larger people, when they decompose because of the extra fat in their body, it has its own unique smell, and it's a lot more pungent than just a typical decomp, and it's very sour, and if you're not prepared for it, it can catch you off guard. I've never actually vomited or been sick or anything like that from smelling, but there were a few times where I've gotten close.
Okay, so for me, the answer to that one would be not so much from what I see. The only time I think I've ever really had like my gag reflex even remotely touched is doing a job pregnant, and you already have that morning sickness kind of thing going on. And then on top of it, you have, you know, like an aversion to certain smells like eggs or coffee or whatever it is. And I've done a few pregnant in the earlier stages of pregnancy, and I was already kind of queasy, and then, you know, a normal smell just kind of set me off a little bit. But that's as close as I've gotten, other than the cat job with the cat odor. Yeah, that actually physically burned my eyes. And even at the end of the day, when you went home and, you know, you take a shower and you scrub 30 times. I remember Ethan coming out of the shower like, I still stink. I don't know what to do. I have scraped every inch of my body with, you know.
That was after 3 showers.
Yeah. And he finally figured out a trick that we use and we tell our guys to use is he uses conditioner, like hair conditioner, after he does a couple scrubs, and then hair conditioner all over his body. And for some reason, it seems to have like the right consistency or oil or something to remove whatever top layer. I don't even know, but
I don't know if it removed it or sealed it in, but you couldn't smell it anymore.
Yeah, that fixed it. So the go-to now is use conditioner after a really bad smelling job. But yeah, I don't think I'm more sensitive to fresh blood than I am decomp. Yeah, I
also realized that she eats Brussels sprouts. So.
Okay, apparently I made my house smell really bad just now.
Oh my God.
Brussels sprouts. Leave my Brussels sprouts alone. Stop it. Okay, next question.
This is Dave from the BSN Network, host of the Boston Sports Nerds podcast, hashtag Dave Speaks, and co-host of the 4-Star Sports Bar Review podcast. Chris Fast asks, can you talk about cost in general?
Okay, Ethan's going to take this one, but I'm going to tell you, the cost is it's so wide and far. There's so many variables. And just a quick example on a hoarding house, like we have done small apartments filled with like newspaper, for example, floor to ceiling. And then we've done large houses that's filled with, you know, boxes and trash and this and that. And the small apartment in that case would take longer and cost more because the density level of the hoard. So we don't do cost over the phone. We like to see the job and bid it based on that. And then on the biohazard side of things, it gets into so many different scenarios that could make a price go up or down.
Yeah, I mean, depending on the material that you have to cut out, time it takes, how far down the body fluid seeped. Like one of the recent episodes, 6 months dead, we had to remove a lot of material, you know, drywall, and we had to remove wall foots and tile, toilets. I mean, it was a lot. So that particular job was a little different because we had to give a bid beforehand. But typically when it's covered by insurance, we will go and we'll, you know, we do what we need to do, and then once it's done, we tally everything up, and that's our bill.
Right. And the truth is like that scenario with the 6 months dead, if he was on the ground floor, it would have been a totally different cleanup and a way less expensive one. But so you, that's just an example of kind of the varying factors that people might not consider when they call and say, hey, I need a price. It's like, okay, well, the first floor is different than the third floor. And I mean, a guy dead for 6 months on the first floor is very different than a guy dead for 1 month on the third floor.
Right. And the thing is, I mean, we've done jobs that were, you know, literally took 5 minutes. Someone hit their head and they bled a little bit and, you know, the person had AIDS. And so the people around it were very freaked out about it. So we go in that we took care of that in 5 minutes. And it was, you know, it was a minimum at that time was $500. So, but we've done jobs that are as little as $500 and as much as $20,000 and anywhere in between. So it really, really depends on the scenario, and there are so many factors that go into the price of a job. So it's kind of hard to say, but I hope that answers your question.
This is Diana from Talk More About That. Listener Lorelei Ayer Anashni Sabernak wants to know, how do you go about getting certified for everything?
Good question. So there's different regulations in different states and obviously countries. So you want to look into that. For me, back when I did it, there was a hands-on training that kind of taught me everything I needed to know to do a job. It gave me all the theory side of stuff as well as the actual physical activity and whatnot. The guy I trained with does not offer that any longer. So I hope that answers your question. I would just say if you're interested in getting into it, turn to the Google gods and start looking at, you know, your regulations in your area and see if there is a training available to you.
This is Maurice from the Up and Vanish podcast. And Emma Wallace asked a question in episode 4. There were toys and homework that were contaminated. Does that have to go into the contaminated waste? Does anything get cleaned up and given back to the family, or does it have to be disposed of? Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, and that specific episode, as far as I know, the family had taken the stuff that they wanted and just they left. I don't think they were ever coming back. Can't say I blame them. So everything that was left behind was essentially trash. However, when it's contaminated or got blood on it, it comes down to it basically comes down to cost. So is it going to be more money for us to sit here and clean all these things and save them? Or is it going to be less money if we just throw it away? So, you know, we're not trying to milk every single penny out of every job. So if it's going to be cheaper for us to just throw it away, then we throw it away. Especially in that situation, nothing from there was going to get saved anyway. And because it can't just be thrown away in a landfill, we had to get rid of it. So we weren't going to bother cleaning it.
Right. So yeah, in that case, it did go into the contaminated waste. We have done a couple jobs where there's something important to the family that is contaminated, and they've asked for us not to dispose of it, even though it's had blood on it. So we have, you know, obviously done our best to take away the stain. It's not always possible, but yes, we have given contaminated things back to the family. Thanks for listening. I've got a couple of trailers for other podcasts you might be interested in.
Hey everyone, I'm Jamie, and I host a podcast called Murderish, which takes you inside stories of murder and other creepy events. The first episode of Murderish lets listeners be a fly on the wall for a first-degree murder trial. The story is told from a juror's perspective, as I was that juror. If you are a true crime junkie and need to know every detail, you'll feel right at home with this podcast. Follow Murderish on Twitter at MurderishPod and on Facebook at Murderish Podcast. And don't worry, this doesn't mean you're a murderer. It just means you're murder-ish.
The Nowhere Dispatch podcast explores the darkest reaches of small towns, wrong turns down dirt roads, and those mysterious things that you can never quite explain. Tune in, listeners, as I, Lucas, your host, tell you about the eerie and creepy things I've found out here in East Texas. From true crime and cold cases to tales of the paranormal, cryptids, and local legends, you'll find something that speaks to the creepy side of your mind. Find the Nowhere Dispatch at nowhere-dispatch.com and listen in on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. We'll be waiting for you to join us on our journey through nowhere.
All right, if you liked what you just heard, show some love and be sure to subscribe. I thought it would be fun to do some bloopers from the first season. Never complained, never worked without a smile. That was... Sorry. He was sitting with his legs crossed and happily eating his sandwich when an innocuous piece of lettuce fell out of his sandwich and landed on his leg. As a strictly reactive move and wasting no time, he picked it up and popped it into his mouth. We all froze and stared in horror as we watched what he had just done. It took a Each step toward the house was followed by the next more and more quickly. There was an audible oh from the realtor. There was an audible oh. Can't even do it. There was an audible oh. I don't know how I'm gonna get through this. There was an audible oh from the realtor. Then it was oh. Then it was oh. Now I'm not here to start a Luckily, the system worked in this case, and he was sentenced to 40 years to life in prison. I can't really vouch for the efficacy. Fuck. Efficacy. 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 Come on. Efficacy. 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 Okay. I can't really vouch for the efficacy. I was lost in my gruesome playback when I heard a scream. Oh, shit. I was lost in my gruesome playback when I heard a scream followed by a thumping downstairs, and I knew my worst fear had become a reality. The killer had returned to the scene and somehow... Oh, come on, quick! Well, thanks for tuning in. That wraps up our Q&A. I'm unsure of when we'll be dropping the first episode from season 2. We're trying to get a little bit of a head start. And if you're on social media, be sure to check us out. We've got a listeners group, pretty active on Twitter. You can keep up with our latest and greatest there. In the meantime, if you have questions, you know, feel free to reach out. We love hearing from you guys and interacting with you guys. Thanks again. I hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you in season 2.